Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's been about 2.5 years since Artie Isaac sold Young Isaac, the advertising agency he had founded. Now he does a whole slew of things. He teaches at Ohio State and CCAD, and he has founded a speaker site called speakersite.com. It's a catchy name. And he is the founding president of the board of Available Light Theater. He also writes plays and acts in them. We talked with him this past summer about To Kill a Mockingbird, the production of To Kill a Mockingbird. I want to welcome him back today to talk about creativity. Welcome back, Artie.
Oh, thanks, Ann. And if I can just go backwards in time for a moment, I founded the board of Available Light Theater, but Available Light Theater pre-existed. Matt Slaybaugh is the founder of it, and I just thought I should say that.
Okay, you should. So I find that maybe someday I'll actually get it straight.
No,
so
you got it straight. I just wanted to make sure.
You teach classes on creativity, but you're the first person to say, I don't like to actually call it that.
Well, I don't like saying that I teach creativity. I do teach – you're right. I teach classes on creativity, but you know, as I set up the class initially, I received a lot of comments from anyone I asked – whenever I ask for somebody's help, send me a syllabus on a course you took on creativity, people would usually respond with the same question. It was, do you really think you can teach creativity? And when they say that, they're suggesting no.
If you have to ask.
Right. And so I happen to agree with them. I don't think I teach creativity so much as I let people understand that – well, let me ask you this question. Are there people you could surround yourself with and places you could put yourself and priorities you could put in front of you and resources you might deny yourself that would result in your being less creative? Right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's life. What I do is I teach people how to stop surrounding themselves with those people and drowning in those priorities and how to stop denying themselves those resources. And what happens is people naturally return to their creative selves.
So, do you think everybody's creative or can be creative?
I think it's like physical fitness. Everybody has a certain level of fitness and can be more so. It just takes the same amount of work.
So when you're teaching a course on creativity – do you grade people on how much they try and how much they actually achieve?
I really don't like grading. It doesn't make sense to me.
I'm sure you don't.
It doesn't make sense to me.
But don't you have to grade?
I have to. Okay. I have to. For a four-credit class needs to be graded. And so I grade basically on how much thought they put into it. I certainly don't grade them on whether I think it's a creative idea. That's not for me to say. Or if they, in defining their life's goal, if I don't like the goal, that's not my business. Everybody gets to make their own goal. So I don't grade so much on content as on the development of the insights. Do they care? Do they work on it?
614-292-8513 is the number to call if you would like to speak to Artie Isaac. We're talking about creativity. Where does it come from and how can you get some of it? You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. I said in my promos for the show that I hope some of it rubs off on me. Because sometimes, you know, you just don't feel as creative as others, but that's probably because something's taking it away. You're surrounding yourself with the wrong people or
– well, if you look at – if we just follow that one metaphor of physical fitness, one more step, everybody knows what it takes to be physically fit. You got to go to the gym. You can't smoke. You got to eat right. I mean, we know you got to get enough sleep. We know these things. And if we don't do them, and sometimes we don't, we suffer a little bit. We understand that. We make this deal every day. Working on your creativity is the same – it takes the same sort of intensity, but you don't have to take a shower afterwards. It's very – it's intentional. And let me just say this, that not doing anything about your creativity and expecting a spontaneous moment of ingenuity is like never going to the gym and expecting a spontaneous moment of fitness. It's not going to happen. You don't say, suddenly I'm physically fit. Creativity is the same way. People say to me all the time, I'm not creative. And I hear this a lot. And I have to ask them, well, how hard are you trying on it? Trying to become creative? People say I'm a terrible cook. Well, how hard have you tried? Have you chopped garlic and onions and put it in a frying pan?
That brings up another question I wanted to ask you because a lot of it has to do with fear.
Yes.
What's the connection between fear and creativity?
I think the connection is that we were given our fears by parents who loved us, and they and the way they showed their love was by trying to instill in us a endless desire for self-sufficiency. And self-sufficiency became accessible to us by our succeeding in certain things. And we were given this belief that anything worth doing is worth doing right. Well, if you only do the things you do right, you're going to stop trying new things. I have to take students, and I don't teach them creativity, but I do teach them that anything worth doing is worth doing wrong at least a few times. Any artist will tell you at CCAD will tell you that the beginning of a design was a pencil sketch or a line or a line on a computer screen that doesn't exist in the final output. Any poet will tell you that the first line written is gone now. I'm writing a play, rewriting a play right now with Matt Slabaugh and Sean Christopher Lewis. And we just chopped out the thing that we started with. The first part of the play is now gone. And we're stunned. I'm stunned. They're not stunned. They've done this. So the only way to get here is by doing it wrong.
And sometimes you get to where you need to go by doing other stuff that you don't need afterward.
There you go.
You're right. I've taken poetry writing classes before, and sometimes there's only one line in a whole poem that I've written that the poet that's instructing us or the class, you know, as critiques, want to keep. But that's really good if you can get one line out of it.
It is, and yet the fear that you asked about initially. It's the fear of all the other stuff. We fear we're not being effective. We fear we're not being efficient. We fear that we're not appearing competent, that every line must be a gem. I agree with you. If I can spend an hour writing and I can write something, anything, mm-hmm. that's beautiful or wonderful or reveals me or humanity, that's great. And that's what we need. We need lower standards. If we only had lower standards, I'm here to bring the world lower standards.
That people are afraid of looking dumb.
We think that quality is the thing we're after. And one of the books I like, The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, talks about quantity overcomes quality. If you do enough stuff, you will produce greatness. You may produce 1,000 things that aren't so great, but one that pops out that's great. But if you wait for that one thing, you may never get there.
So creativity requires a lot of work.
Yes. It's Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000-hour rule. Mm-hmm. You know, in Outliers, he talks about how if you look at these what appear to be geniuses, they're really people who have spent 10,000 hours trying. And we have to ask ourselves, have we spent 10,000 hours trying to be more creative? Have we looked for the exercises that are clearly available to us? Have we spent an hour a week or a half an hour a day trying to exercise our creativity? If not, have we even taken a different way home at night? Are we always driving the same way? Are we listening to the radio the entire way home? Or are we thinking a little bit? Are we afraid of our solitude? There's so many opportunities to become stronger as artists. And I think we relegated, that's the word, art and creativity to the artists.
That's an interesting notion. I think I was reading – it might have been something that you sent along my way, that how creativity has been perceived over the ages. At one point, it was almost heretical because creativity only came from the creator, and then eventually was given over to the artists. At one point, those scientists were considered creative.
And
I don't know what I was reading.
It sounds great. I hope I wrote that. Woe is the time we live in when we decide that our goal is consumption and efficiency and not creativity. That's when we know it's the beginning of the end. Truly. I mean, creativity is the one thing that will save this economy.
And a lot of people think that's such a luxury to even think that.
Oh, it seems extravagant. Creatives are viewed as people who are heavily pierced and smoke the wrong things. And it's just Phyllis Green, who you had on the show recently, happens to be a friend of mine, and she is a blogger at 90 and is a creative soul in that she always has a next act. Mm-hmm. And it's so inspiring, and that's what the creative person is someone who is constantly saying, what's next? I don't want to be doing the same thing in the same way after 5 years. Noam Chomsky, bright guy, said if you're teaching the same thing in the same way after 5 years, you lack ambition or imagination. I think that's true of any business. We have to constantly be changing. Or it's just a long death.
614-292-8513. James, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I was going to comment on the discussion that you had earlier about parents teaching self-sufficiency.
It's just all one big fat discussion, James, so go for it.
Right. Well, I was going to use an example of my father, who actually quit school in the eighth grade but became a successful businessman and was creative all of his life. And I think that he had three basic tenets which guided him and which he tried to pass on to me. First was that you have to have an ethical viewpoint, which is correct and good, and you need to work at creating that to guide your actions for the future. Second, you have to show up, and that's evidenced by hard work in whatever your chosen field of endeavor is. And third, remember, this is a man who quit school in the eighth grade and who felt handicapped by that all of his life, but actually wasn't too much. But the value of education, therefore, education provides the grist for what you need in order to be more creative. And I have found those to be pretty good guidelines through my own life, actually.
Well, I, you know, as far as the value of education goes, I bet you he was self-educated.
Well, of course. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he became a business owner and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. He would have liked to have been a physician, but because his father died when he was in the eighth grade, that wasn't possible. And sure, he was self-educated, but he, for his children, he had only, he didn't care where we went to school, but the point was, you will go to college and beyond, if possible.
Artie?
The fear is instilled in us early, and you are so lucky to have had a father who was self-made in so many ways, because our schools are a representation of our parents. In loco parentis, they're simply asked by our parents to pick up that fear and make us as self-sufficient as possible. There's a creative educator workshop happening at Columbus College of Art and Design on Friday, October 15th, for educators all over the area to come and learn how to instill creativity like your father did in the classroom. It's so close to everyone's heart and to everyone's skill set. We're just not asking our teachers enough to do that.
That's interesting. That's an interesting perspective.
That's what you say about an ugly baby. Where are you going with that?
Yep. Well, I wouldn't go anywhere with it, but the observation that you make, that I was fortunate to have come from a father who was sort of a self-made man, because perhaps he had a different perspective, that is a take on it that I've never had before. So I find that a flash of insight, actually.
All right. Well, James, thanks for calling.
Thank you, James.
You.
Thanks for listening. We have to take a break right now. When we return, we'll get to emails and more of your calls if you want, 614-292-8513, or the email address is allsides@wosu.org. I just want to remind our listeners about wosu.org/survey. We're looking for your thoughts, your comments, your criticisms of All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you go to that survey at wosu.org/survey, you can give them to us. It doesn't take but a minute, and we would really appreciate it. So I hope you can join us there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU, 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News, and at noon, fresh air will be here, and it's back to C Street. Jeff Charlotte's new book that follows up on his bestseller, The Family. We'll get the latest on the evangelical Christian group that includes powerful senators and congressmen in Washington, D.C., and we'll talk about the rise of Christian evangelicals in the military and C Streeters in the news. That's on fresh air at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. It's 78 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Sunny and hot today. We might hit a near record high of 93 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 68. Some sunshine for Friday. There is a chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms, a high of 88 degrees. And looking ahead to the weekend, sunny and a little cooler with a high of 73 for Saturday. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Artie Isaac. He's over here boogieing into my music.
I like it. I like your music.
It was composed for the show by Alan DeCenzo.
I love Alan. He's a bright, brilliant guy.
It was wonderful.
He's a perfect example of someone who loves what he's doing. And as a result, and because he has some great natural talent. But because he's doing what he loves, he's doing it really well, and nobody can beat him at it.
And he just made us feel like we were so special when he was writing the song for the show.
I've been with him when he's writing music, and it is a wonderful experience. It's fun to be with someone who's technically proficient, who's having a great time.
I'm just so glad we could bring up Alan DiCenzo today because I mention him from time to time, you know, once a week, give him credit for the song. But
he's a role model.
Karen, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. And hey, Artie, it's Karen.
Hi, Karen. I love you. Sorry, this is not the time or place.
Yeah, no. But the feeling's mutual. Absolutely. So, Artie, I've been lucky enough to know you and see you through several incarnations. And I loved your reference to the 90-year-old blogger. Can you tell us what your next act is? Because I think we all wait in great anticipation.
Well, Karen Huff of Improv Edge is someone who's taught me how to teach improvisational theater techniques to business people. So that's one of my next acts. Karen, I think as you know, I'm trying very hard not to have a single next act. I'm juggling a variety of balls, and I'm enjoying that. And some of them are getting heavier and taking on a golden hue. And I'm going to have to put some of them down at some point. But I don't rightly know. I think I want to write, but I want to write in a way that's different than I've been writing. And I want to act a couple more times because it's a lot of fun. Basically, what I am is a teacher who is masquerading as a variety of other things. I sometimes am teaching in the form of, you know, coaching individual people. Sometimes it's in the classroom at Ohio State or Columbus College of Art and Design. Sometimes I'm teaching, but it looks like I'm acting in a play, but really there's a message I'm trying to impart. Right now, I think I'm on the radio, but I am actually trying to teach something. So I'm really just a teacher in search of students.
How's
that, all right?
So great. Yeah, absolutely. I guess it's just that it's been so fascinating to me and other people who know you that these beautiful creative ideas that have come out of you have become businesses often. And it sometimes seems so out of the blue. That's why we're curious. So thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks for your call, Karen. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
We have an email from a listener. They write, can Artie suggest how someone who was very creative as a kid but got out of the habit in the day-to-day working life of an adult can get their creativity back? As a CCAD grad, I used to draw and paint all the time. Now when I try and take it up again, I've lost all my CCAD bred ability and draw like a 2-year-old! Exclamation mark and question mark.
So first, we're just going to breeze past the whole question of what's wrong with drawing and painting like a 2-year-old. I think the insight that this person is looking for, that they are suddenly working and grading their work at the exact same time. Mm-hmm. I do post my syllabus from my Ohio State class, Personal Creativity and Innovation, on my blog site, and we can put it on the WOSU 820 all sides page.
Website.
Yeah, we can do that as well. But I would just say, if I were to grab one thing, I would say buy a copy of The Artist's Way. It's a book by Julia Cameron. I pretend to teach it, but really it can't be taught. It's just something, it's a workbook, and it's a 12-week, frankly, it's a 12-step program that gets people not away from substance abuse or addictions, but gets people away from their creative obstacles. We all have creative obstacles. It's a variety of beliefs that were once functional that are now dysfunctional that we have to destroy, and we have to move on. If you work your way through The Artist's Way, you will find, especially if you do it maybe once a year, you will be unstoppable. There are a couple of assignments in there that are just brilliant and effective, require a leap over disbelief when you first accept them. One is to write 3 pages every morning before breakfast, longhand. It's punishing. And I can't tell you how it works, but after 6 weeks, you'll tell me, oh, it works. Another one is to take an hour each week on what Julia Cameron calls an artist's date. This is where you go someplace unfamiliar, alone, and simply experience it. It's playing hooky, I guess, but it's a way of seeing something that and finding stimuli that you might otherwise not encounter if we stay in the rut. And but when I say alone, I mean alone. No dog. No cell phone, no iPod.
No kid.
Especially
The Artist's
not your
Way by Julia Cameron. We'll post a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And, of course, we'll post a link to Artie's page and, you know, whatever else that's significant,
Ann,
and relevant to the conversation. 614-292-8513. Wendy, you're on the air with Artie Isaac. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I called in when you first mentioned the artist's way, and then you just elaborated on it. And I was going to say, it does work, and I don't know how it works. I've been in two groups of the artist's way, and the second one I facilitated thinking, oh, I'll help others get in touch with their creativity. And lo and behold, I was at CACA one day, saw a brochure on acting, and said, oh, what the heck? And at age 50, I got into acting, and for the next 10 years, I did community theater and completely enjoyed it, never expecting that it was something I could do. But I think all of us can get in touch with our creativity, and the way for me was the artist's way. So it's never too late.
Yeah, how wonderful to start acting at 50. I mean, in some ways, that's crazy. I did it much earlier. I started at 48. I completely agree with you. We don't know how it works, I will say this about the artist's way, and maybe you found this true as well. If you read it at the wrong time of life, maybe the wrong time of day, but it's just goofy. It sounds like it was written in California, and you just have to sort of hold your nose and say, no way. But then you'd come back, and the same text means something different at a different time of life because you realize, oh, this is the message I was looking for.
Yes, yes. I've had to buy a second copy because I underlined and highlighted so much in my first one.
And now it distracts you, and you have new things to underline.
Yes, I do. Uh-huh.
Do you go back and go through it again every once in a while?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh. And I'm surprised, and I smile, and I think, oh, how could I write that? And yet things continue to ring true, and things were true just at that time. Yes, it's very fascinating.
Right, because you come back and you're different. That's how we talked about To Kill a Mockingbird, or really any great text. You come back to it, you bring yourself to it, and suddenly it's different and wonderful.
Right. And then at age 60, of course, OSU offers that wonderful program, 60, and I've been going over there and thoroughly enjoying that sort of thing.
Right. You can take, at 60, you can take classes for free. You register. Come take my class. It would be great to
I'm
have
you. I'm writing it down. I'm writing it down, indeed.
Yeah, you can audit it. It's a program at OSU if the instructor slash professor approves.
I approve.
And
but
I've
you
never
already
one.
Approves.
Mm-hmm. I've never had one not approved. They are very welcoming.
I can't wait till I turn 60.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Wendy, because you audit the classes. It's an audit program, is it? Okay.
But I don't allow people to audit the class and not participate. There are no spectators in my class. Everyone's got to participate.
I think I asked somebody when we were talking about that on another show. It's like, well, can you participate? I mean, because to me, that would be the what it's all about, showing up to the class. It was something I did, and participating. So they said, well, looked at me like I was crazy. So let's see, 614-292-8513. Jerry, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ms. Fisher, Mr. Isaacs. Great show. I believe the poet Robert Frost said success is 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. I may have those figures wrong, but it was close to that. He also said the brain is a wonderful organ. It starts working as soon as you get up in the morning and stops once you get in the office.
Or on the radio, maybe, for me.
Or on the radio. But he also wrote what I think is almost the perfect poem, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening. And you remember that poem?
Miles to go before I sleep and miles to go before I sleep.
Isn't that a beautiful poem? And with all due respect to the fellow who said his father was a self-made man, you both old enough to remember the columnist Sidney J. Harris passed away about, oh gosh.
I think you've brought him up before, Jerry.
Yeah, but not with this.
So I can't tell if it's from you mentioning it before or from me actually reading him.
You probably read him.
Okay.
Because he was syndicated with the Sun-Times.
Okay.
Anyway, with all due respect to that, he said that, only problem with a self-made man is he's too proud of his maker. And we all get it in our genes, you know, from our forefathers, grandfathers, and who knows.
Mothers, grandmothers.
Right. But anyway, it's a great program.
Thanks. Thank you. Out of fairness to James, I think it was I that said his father was self-made. And during the break, I mentioned to Anne that about fathers, that Molière said that the greatest thing a father can do for his son is to die young.
Well, I had an uncle, I've mentioned this to Ms. Fisher before, Uncle Willie, 1874 to 1952. I don't think he went past the eighth grade. He was a river hog, ran logs down the river in the 1890s. But the most well-read man, he could tell you history, and my gosh, you'd go down and visit him, he'd say he'd have newspaper clippings on a strung on a wire there, and he'd say, did you see this? Did you see this? Did you see that? And he knew everything, read it all. But he was, you know, that was in the days of when newspapers were on top of the hill. But thank you very much, and have a wonderful day, folks.
Thanks, Jerry. You too.
You know, I found that a lot of the most creative people I know are ones that might be considered, I don't know, self-educated, if not self-made. Those of us with fancy degrees think, oh, if I wonder if I'm educated, I can just look at the wall and point to the degree. Those who aren't classically educated, my grandmother, Kitty Sokol of way back, blessed memory, she constantly tried to catch up. And as a result, she lapped all of us in much of her reading and understanding. And it's sometimes, I don't know, I hate to say this, but sometimes an advantage not to mistake yourself for educated.
We have some emails. If you'd like to email us, allsides@wosu.org. This is from Abdul. I learned when I was in college that children have a 100% creativity from birth. That is why they have imaginations. But that creativity begins to drop in the first grade and every year after that because their thinking is now restricted to school books and their creativity becomes much less than what they had before. I certainly see this in my children. What does your guest think and how can we reverse that in non-conventional methods?
Wonderful. I completely agree with you, Abdul. I think it was Picasso who said that all children are prodigies until told otherwise. And I think the thing we can do, Christopher Canyon, one of my heroes, he's a children's book illustrator who has a very compelling story that I won't tell. But the end of the story is that if we come home from school and we can't add well, they drill us with flashcards. If we can't spell well, our parents will drill us with word lists. But if we don't draw well, our parents might very well say, oh, well, we're not creative. I think that we can't blame school. I think that we have to figure out what's going on at home. Halloween's coming up. Are we making our own costumes or are we buying them? That, to me, is a clear test of whether we think that we are the kooky neighbors next door who make their own tinfoil hats and actually are pretty darn creative, or we're the more dignified people next door who go out and buy a mask. There are opportunities to create all the time, and I think we just have to get in the game. Our kids want role models, and the role models that we need for a creative society are people who are building things, making things, and not just buying them. And making, what does that mean? Making their own fun, making their own furniture, making everything else in between.
That's an interesting point. Creative, you know, the definition to create is to make something where nothing was before.
Right. And as you said earlier, Anne, we started to say, oh, creativity is something for artists. And so then we started to say, well, artists really are just working with paint or clay or wood or buildings. We have delegated creativity to a creative class, which while that, I guess, in our economy's desire to specialize, have each of us specialize in what we do best. Maybe that makes sense. There's a lot of training involved in architecture. But wait a minute. The rest of us, are we really just the audience? I don't think so. And we will raise a generation of zombies if all they see us doing is watching other people.
614-292-8513. Tom, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I find that the more creative I am, the more self-reliant I become, and that's where I really find personal freedom. And that all happens best when I'm out backpacking, and about the third or fourth day in the backcountry, which you have to be self-reliant in order to enjoy nature, that's where the creative juices flow, and I really feel, you know, that like, wow, I can take the next step, whatever that might be.
Tom, that's great. That, right. There is a there's a misconception about trying to tone down that creativity early in life so that you might be self-sufficient. What you point out is absolutely the skill we need is the creativity. It is the skill when you're backpacking of survival. but it's also the skill of when you're crossing the street at broad and high of survival. Our creativity is sewn into us as not just this thing for when we're retired or thing to have as a fun tool. It's our very survival. It's our way, the way we reshape our businesses, the way we raise our children, the way we deal with ourselves in the mirror in a life that now is feeling a whole lot more, in an economy that's feeling a whole lot more like a really long backpacking trip.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing, like you said, with the urban environment, if in order to not get run over nowadays especially, you have to focus. You have to be aware of your environment. And so urban dwellers are just as good at it as if they were way out in the backcountry. They just don't have all the other skills maybe that they need. But the point is trying to focus your attention on something for more than just a millisecond in this scattered world we live in.
Right. And so what are we going to focus on? Tom, we're going to focus on the stuff that we think is the most interesting. We're going to focus on what we're passionate about. So when walking in the backcountry, I'm going to the bottom of the Grand Canyon in about a month. Mm-hmm. So I love that sort of stimuli. So now we take the guy who's walking around in penny loafers at Broad and High. He has two choices. He can walk as if getting to the next place is a chore and something that he wishes himself past, or he can approach it much as you approach and I approach walking in the backcountry as this opportunity. What am I going to see? Yeah. What am I going to learn? If we can figure out how to be passionate about what seems mundane but really isn't because it's our lives, life is better. And we become more creative.
That's really it in a nutshell. Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate your show. And I called my son, who's an artist. He's going to go to graduate school, and I told him to listen to you. Thanks.
Well, they can always listen tonight if you couldn't catch it this morning because we rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m. And, of course, you can always get it online on our archives, and you can download the podcast. A little sales job there, Tom. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Take care. There's lots of ways to join the show. Just sometimes listening is part of joining. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have to take another break. When we return, we'll return with Artie Isaac. We're going to talk about, I hope, flow, and also what's going on at the Columbus Museum of Art on Thursday, October 14th. We'll get to all of that when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and to me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon. This is WOSU 820, NPR News. And in public radio, listener feedback is very important. We'd like to hear your thoughts on our radio and web programming. We'd also like to hear your thoughts on All Sides with Ann Fisher. NPR is partnering with WOSU, and we're creating an online audience advisory panel. And for you to be a part of it, all you have to do is go to WOSU.org/survey. There you can sign up and send us your thoughts. The survey only takes a couple of minutes. WOSU.org/survey.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
79 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40 this morning. Sunny and hot today. We may reach a near record high of 93 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 68. Some sunshine with a chance of afternoon rain for Friday. All Sides continues on to WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Artie Isaac. He teaches classes on creativity. Artie, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you, Ann. This is a delight. for me.
We have an email from Bob. He says that he was a student of Don Michaels for almost 25 years. It seems to me that one of Don's main messages about organizational learning hinges on the organization, especially overcoming resistances to change. We usually think of creative people instead of creativity-inducing organizations run by creativity-inducing bosses. Bosses often demand their staffs to think quote-unquote outside the box, but what they really mean is to think more into the boss's box. It seems to me that creative organizations require people who own them to give up much control. Thoughts?
Well, absolutely. And I think some of the most enlightened chief executives that I work with that I study recognize that it's a fallacy to think for one moment that all the good ideas will be generated at the top. I think some of these great companies that we're watching right now in technology and healthcare and elsewhere are recognizing that everybody can contribute and must contribute to the creative renovation of our business plans and our culture. I've been working with banks that might seem on the outside to be sort of stuck in a regulatory environment, and how can they reinvent themselves? And we've found that it makes a lot of sense to not just talk to the executives up on the 25th floor, but let's talk to people in the branches and see what they know. We have this great untapped wellspring of creativity. It is everywhere. Everybody can play, and the enlightened management recognizes that.
You know, we were talking about you're comparing creativity to being physically fit. And it made me just think just a moment ago about the runner's high. We hear about the runner's high. I've actually experienced that a couple times. I don't run enough anymore to have it, but I actually know what they're talking about. When people are being creative and are getting into that mode of creativity, is there a creative high?
Absolutely, and that's called flow. We wanted to talk about flow. Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, the author of a series of books that deal with what he calls flow, which is the optimal psychological experience, that's when your challenges that you're facing and trying to overcome are equally matched with the skills that you've developed. So there you have it. You have challenges and skills to deal with those challenges. Flow is ever stepping out on that diving board and going a little bit further. Harder challenges, harder, more talent to deal with it, more skill to deal with it. Flow feels like, and I think everybody knows this. For me, it feels like I'm deaf to the world. I'm up all night doing this thing. I am sweating. The hair stands up on the back of my neck. I'm not happy as much as I am engaged, and in some ways scared. And I'm getting a lot of feedback on how it's going. I can tell. So I think of someone who surfs. I don't surf, but if you surf, you're always in danger of flying off the board, and that is flow. And it's very much like the athletic experience. We know it physically if we work on it, but rare is the person. Too rare is the person who will actively seek out the flow experience.
I think that's what Mickey wants to talk about. Mickey, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I like to suggest that one of the reasons that people hesitate to be creative is the fear of failing in their undertaking. I like to tell you what my personal philosophy has been through the years, and maybe that some people would like it.
Okay.
My personal philosophy is that if I want to undertake something, I would try to undertake to do it myself, having in mind that what is the worst thing that could possibly happen? I would fail. Well, in that case, I would call a professional to correct my failure. In so doing, through the years, I have empirically acquired enough expertise and, you might say, creativity to do many things which initially I was very hesitant of undertaking.
Like what?
Like, for instance, let's say I want to build a garden shed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I am by myself. You know, I have no way of lifting all those heavy beams and so on. Well, I would try various ways, which I learned through life, maybe use pulleys or use engineering principles. If I want to correct, do some plumbing in a way that was not done before. For instance, very few people, let's say, would think of collecting rainwater. I would devise some way of doing rainwater to water my flowers in a way that initially when I undertook, I was afraid maybe, well, maybe that would not work. Maybe I would be ridiculed. So in so doing, you try and you find pathways to create situations, a resolution to situations that you have never undertaken before.
I love the phrase, the pathways.
Okay.
Artie?
I do as well, and I love the idea of a really bad-looking garden shed in the backyard because, you know, you're not gonna die. We're not gonna do something terrible to you because you made a bad garden shed. And along the way, you've learned all these things about proper sheddery that that is I think life affirming. We all learn to walk this way, and one of my favorite teachers, Sri Kumar Rao, teaches personal mastery and creativity at Columbia University's Graduate School of Business. Bright guy, and he's got a TED talk right now on online where he talks about how if we learn to walk with the same standards that we build our garden sheds, always going into therapy after the third step, which is a third fall. Yeah, I just love the way you've gone into the backyard and said I'm gonna collect rainwater and then let's see what happens. And if I need, if I really mess up the plumbing, there are plumbers to save me.
Exactly.
Thank you, Mickey.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Good day.
614-292-8513. And Rob, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Rob.
Hey, I'm sorry. I just had a dead space there.
That's okay.
My question is basically, I just was very fortunate enough to go to India for meditation, and I gave up the computer, I gave up the cell phone, the everything, and the creativity level for and when you meditate, yoga, it seems to increase a lot. And I was just wondering your experience with that, and then when I got back, you noticed it reverses itself. Do you have any comments?
I've experienced the same thing, so I certainly agree. When I was 13, transcendental meditation was a popular thing. The Beatles were doing it. And so I ended up – we got the family deal somehow. It's a longer story, but my whole family ended up parents, sister. We ended up all learning how to do transcendental meditation, and it absolutely changed my life. Now, a lot of people could roll their eyes and say, oh, for goodness sakes, cookie cutter. There are all kinds of problems with meditation in that it looks like playing hooky. But I completely agree with you on both your points that if we just slow down and breathe, doesn't have to be somebody's program. If we just slow down and breathe, we're going to be more creative. And as you said, when we return to the highly stimulated life, our creativity starts to go away. I think that our natural selves abhor a vacuum. And so we constantly fill quiet space and quiet time and solitude. And we fill it the easiest way possible because, well, we're sort of generally lazy. And that's turning on the TV and that's checking my email. And I'm like this too. I mean, I don't want anyone to think I'm cured. I'm as caught up in drowning in opportunity as anyone checking my email. But you just said it very well, and I know, and I think everybody knows, that week of vacation is really restorative. And so the question I think we have to ask ourselves is, well, why don't we try to live as much like that as possible all the time?
That's a good comment. But, what I'm also noticing is when I was immersed, I lived from the heart and not the intellect. And any comments on that?
Yes, I think that especially we that are were once boys, we were taught to take our emotions upstairs and come back downstairs when our emotions are gone.
That's an interesting.
Well, I think they were afraid that we
come
would
come back when you can,
when you're happy, right. and so I think a lot of us heard that, and again, these were parents that loved us that were afraid that we would never survive our emotions. However, there's two parts to us, and one part of it is heart and emotion. There is a life below the neck, and And it's not just an interruption or a distraction. Our emotions are nature's way of saying, hey, something's going on. Pay attention. We're adults. We have radar. We should be trusting our radar. And yet what we're doing is we're not looking at half the signals. So right to trust your heart is something that was trained out of us as a distraction. And in fact, you find when you go on vacation, when you meditate, it's really part of who you are.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
We have an email from Kristen, and then we're going to talk about Columbus Museum of Art. Kristen writes, does the artist's way work if one does morning notes in the evening? I have a hard time getting up early enough to do the morning notes. And don't forget auditing classes at Columbus State. I took art history at the Dublin campus this spring. I did participate in class. It was neat, and I was auditing the class, and another student was in high school and taking the class. That's cool. So
does the morning
artist
pages,
way work
right.
if you do it at night versus the morning?
Right. So, Kristen, the problem with my class is when almost every question they ask about the morning pages produces a really negative answer from me. Do we really have to write three pages? Does it have to be end to end? Does it have to be every day? Does it have to be before breakfast? All of these, it's always the answer they don't want. Writing at night is great and wonderful, and I encourage it. We should write all day long. There's a particular benefit to doing it in the morning, and that benefit is all our creativity takes some form at some point in the creative process in language. And I know nothing about plastics extrusion, but I have this idea that it's something like Play-Doh, that the first thing to come out of the mold when we push Play-Doh through the mold is sort of bumpy and it doesn't work so well, but then it comes out smooth. I think the same thing is true when we wake up in the morning. Our first words, we're trying to put them together. When I get to the water cooler in the morning at first moment in an office, I've already written three pages. Everyone else is putting their first words together. There is a absolute, distinct, and direct benefit to doing it in the morning, and I'm sorry that it's not natural. It is, however, enormously effective.
Okay, I get it now that it's starting this process.
It's a warm-up.
Early. It's a warm-up, right.
Like
I
fitness.
Actually do my best writing in the morning. Personally.
Kristen doesn't. And so she's not happy
right.
to hear that.
Sorry, Kristen.
Well, you know what? It's worth trying it as a horrible regimen for 10 or 12 weeks. And then come back and say, did this work or not? And I think, Kristen, you will find out that it was worth doing.
And just to reiterate, you wanted us to remember about auditing classes at Columbus State. And I guess
right.
people should check about auditing
Everywhere.
Classes wherever you're at and whatever is convenient for you. I mean, you never know if you don't ask.
We told a lot of people that at 22, they're done with school, or 26 or 18 or whatever the age was. And the problem is what really happened is we went from being students to being both students and teachers. It is our lifelong obligation each year to acquire a new teacher. We've got to find them.
Now.
Speaking
What's
which,
happening at Columbus Museum of Art on Thursday, October 14th?
So my friends at the Columbus Museum of Art and I have been working together on a program, an all-day program, starts at 8:30, ends at 3 on Thursday, October 14th. It's called Creativity in Your Life. And it's born out of a desire to, in some ways, give a sneak peek to the Creativity Lab and Innovation Center that's about to be opened at the next year, at the top of the year. At the Columbus Museum of Art, undergoing a massive renovation right now. It's also, personally, my desire to respond to people who have asked me, can I take your class at Ohio State? And the answer is, well, no. I guess if you're over 60, you can. But my friends can't take it. There are rules. And so this is a way to have a one-day exploration into your creativity. We're going to talk to Liz Lessner and Pete Scantlin. Liz Lessner is this great restaurateur in town with Dirty Franks and a handful of other restaurants that are all just enormously inspiring and creative. Pete Scantlin is the fellow of Orange Barrel Media, mm-hmm. who's created advertising that really has become landmarks and creative landmarks. We're going to have Michael Chabon, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author, is going to come and speak to us, I'm going to give a session on seven things you can do to keep your mind nimble and your creativity alive. And then we're going to end the day with carry forth. What are you going to do to do this? What are you actually going to do? And how can you see your way through to getting it done? It's going to be a one day
Can anybody do it?
Anybody can do this. And this is the idea. We made it in the middle of the day. We priced it, I think, inexpensively enough that just about anybody can do it. It's $45, $30 for seniors or students. And it includes lunch. So come at least for the lunch.
614-292-8513. We have a few more minutes if you have a call. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You've mentioned a lot of people who are your role models. But if I were to ask you that question, who would pop to mind at the top of the list?
Both of our children. All right, Duncan and Helen are enormously creative and inspired people. Partly it's because they haven't been told at least too many times otherwise. And I am learning. I'm going to a rap concert in a couple of weeks, and it's something I would not have otherwise done. But you know, Duncan said, "Let's go." Who was it that said it? I think it was Plato. Let's blame Plato. I think he said, we can't make our children be more like us, but we can become more like our children. And I heard that on NPR, which is what I say when I want people to believe me, unless they want to hear me say Fox. I think that's really a strategy for living. How can I become more like my children? They're pretty high functioning, these kids, not just mine. And so those are initially my role models. But you could list a thousand, from Julia Child to Mother Teresa. They're everywhere.
Now, the caller at the very beginning, I can't remember if her name was Karen.
Karen Huff, yeah.
Karen Huff. She asked what your next act was. I'm going to ask it a little bit differently because it's something that you've mentioned. You said in an article that I read about you that you're closer now to death than birth, and you had to figure out what would be your legacy.
Well, I don't know. I am in the legacy phase of life, I guess, where we're trying to figure out, everything was prologue up till now. And I have to say I'm not entirely sure, except it's in the teaching of students in the classroom, and it's in the play that I've written that will be reprised. We're bringing it back. It's revised substantially December 8th at the Rife Center.
What's the name of it?
It's called Consolidated Amalgamated's Annual Christmas Spectacular, featuring Winfred Doak, CFO, except playing the role of Winfred Doak as Artie Isaac. That's the name of it. It has some structural problems, as you can tell. But the idea is it's a Christmas carol rewritten for the modern day. I hope that my legacy is that I am somehow able to lead people to recognize that time has meaning. Words have meaning. Actions have meaning. The way we celebrate our holidays has meaning. But I really don't know if my legacy will ever be easy for me to place on the front of my business card.
Okay. Well, we talked a little bit about Flo. We did not get to Katzinger's. There's more to talk about. I hope you'll come back again.
Yes, please.
All righty. My guest this hour has been Artie Isaac. He is teaches at Ohio State and also CCAD, and he has founded a speaker site called speakersite.com, and he is president of the board of Available Light Theater. He also writes plays and acts in them, and we'll have links to almost all of this stuff on wosu.org/allsides. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners and investment consultants helping clients achieve financial independence through professional planning at sherringtongroup.com.